Roundtable Podcasts, underwritten by Proctors, the Capital Region's premier performing arts center featuring the best in entertainment from Broadway and around the globe. Proctors.org.
Brett Hayes, here we are in the Congressional Corner. You're a brilliant academic, I know that. And the question that I have for you is, what difference will it make that Republicans are in control of both houses of the Congress?
Well, I think it'll make quite a bit of difference when we think a little bit about leverage, the ability for Republicans to gain better bargains and kind of enact some of their policies by controlling both houses. Before, of course, they weren't able to send up their agenda to the White House, even with the likelihood of a veto because of the Democratic majority in the Senate. Now they're going to be able to send quite a bit more up to the White House and assert kind of new pressures on Obama. And that in some ways kind of flips the coin, right? Before, Obama was able to say, you know, we have a do-nothing Congress. Now Congress may be able to say we have a kind of a do-nothing president. And so that has, of course, important political consequences as well.
Do you think, though, that the 60 votes that you need to get anything done in the Senate, the Senate, we're always, the Democrats were always saying that's a bad thing. Now the Senate Democrats are going to be saying that's a good thing. Democrats are going to say that's a good thing. Do you think that that'll be used by the Democrats the way that it has been by the Republicans in the past?
No, I don't think it'll be used in the same way. I think they will use it. I think right now what we see are, you know, that the Republicans have to prove that they can legislate. And to do this, they're going to be interested in picking up some Democratic votes. And I think that's probably more likely in the Senate. The Senate has always had greater collegiality, more kind of a centrist vibe to it than the House. But this is a delicate balance for the Republicans, right? Because they're going to need to be mindful of their conservative wing, even while trying to pick up Democratic votes. And this conservative wing of the party, you know, associated with the Tea Party and the like, is very eager to capitalize on this new majority and to do things that are going to hamstring President Obama and his policies. So, and I think for the Democrats, then on the flip side, right, they're in an interesting position, right, because of course they have a smaller coalition, but it's also a more liberal coalition, right, which kind of raises the question about how much space there will be for agreement on some of the big issues that the Congress will face in the coming session, and they're going to figure out how to gain some leverage in this process, and which I think is just kind of the question of. The Democrats will need to decide what kind of minority party they want to be, whether they want to be kind of obstructionist, as you suggested, with use of the filibuster, or if they want to participate meaningfully in the legislative agenda.
There are those people who think now that they have both houses and now that they're so angry at the president for having sort of broken out of the box with administrative rules changes, that they'll try to impeach him. You see that happening?
No, I don't. I think the leadership is frightened of impeachment. I think they, in many ways, have learned their lesson. It doesn't mean that there
from
won't,
Clinton, yeah,
from Clinton, yeah, yeah. That there won't be, some noise made on that on the wings of the party. But I mean, if you look at the lame duck period here. And that is a different Congress. But all of a sudden, Congress was able to get some things done, right? They were able to pass the spending bill, the $1.1 trillion spending bill. And I think that suggests that there may, in fact, be room for compromise on a handful of things. Now, it doesn't mean that things are going to be contentious, right? If you think about the big issues that are coming up, right, we have immigration, we have healthcare reform, we have tax reform, and probably energy and climate policy. Some of that's going to be very contentious. So if you think about immigration reform, I just mentioned the spending bill. Well, the one thing that they did was to only fund Homeland Security through February, which means that they're going to try to essentially undo Obama's new kind of immigration policies. But they can't simply undo, right? They have to figure out that they can legislate. They have to switch from that party of no to the party of something.
Well,
right?
The president keeps saying, "Send me a bill."
Send you a bill, right? And that is something that they're not used to, right? And that's going to be a change. And we're going to have to see how much control the leadership has over over their membership. And I don't expect to see a lot more control than what they've had in the past, but I do think they will be willing to reach across the aisle a little bit to try to grab a handful of votes from Democrats in order to make some of these reforms possible. So, for example, in tax reform, I mean, I think there's a real opportunity for Democrats and Republicans to get together go through this reform process, particularly as it pertains to corporate taxes. I don't know that they'll get to kind of individual taxes.
Well, what in the world makes you think, Brad Hayes, that they will, that the Republicans, who take so much of their money from the big boys, will want to take on the big corporations?
I don't think they want to take them on, right? I mean, what they want to do is actually increase efficiency. They want to simplify the tax code, but broaden its application, right? And so that you can make the argument that this is actually good for business because you'll spend less on the actual process of doing your taxes. It will be an easier code. There will be fewer violations, et cetera, just enhance efficiency. Mm-hmm. But even through simplification, you can expand who the taxes apply to and create things that may, in fact, I guess, in some ways, appeal to the business community.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, that tax reform, I think, is possible. But there are going to be some real fights, right? There's already an effort to undo part of Obamacare. For example, there is a move by the Republicans to change what currently counts as full time to get such mandatory coverage. Right now, it's at 30, a 30-hour work week qualifies you. They want to raise that to a 40-hour work week, right? And that's a big, big fight. And,
sure.
And it will affect core constituents. For the Democratic Party, that's about women and about protecting the interests of women, because we know that women are more adversely affected by that 40-hour standard. So, you know, Democrats aren't going to be quick to capitulate on something like that, and that means a fight.
I guess into all of this comes Mr. Scalise, who is a congressman who, it now turns out, talked to a group that was at least in the minds of many affiliated with the Ku Klux Klan. But what makes this an important story is that he's the third-ranking Republican in the new Republican leadership. I see you shaking your head.
Yeah.
What do you make of this?
It's stunning, I think. The Republican Party has such a race problem. It is remarkable how much they continue to fall into this. Sometimes with intention. You could see, like, the voter ID laws. To things like this, and we can think back to, I think it was 2002, when Trent Lott gave the speech at Strom Thurmond's birthday party and basically praised segregationist policies. And he had to step down. And I mean, I think the GOP needs to act very quickly here. And Scalise needs to step down, at least in the leadership position. I mean, probably should leave office. But in terms of the National Republican Party, he cannot continue to be in a leadership position, because this hurts the Republican Party, both in the short term, right? They're losing some of the capital that they have going into the session. And it affects them long term. I mean, this is the thing with the Republican Party, that it cannot be the party of old white men. And it has to appeal to those that look differently than old white men. And having individuals in the leadership that appear to be, you know, if not outright racist, having a willingness to associate with those who are clearly racist is deeply problematic.
Always great to have Brad Hayes, Associate Professor of Political Science at Union College, with us. Hey, Brad, when we come back the next time, I'm sure we can come up with some interesting stuff to talk about.